Hey everyone, you are listening to Undocumented Sabah. I am Husna, your host, and I'll take you along as we uncover the issue of statelessness in Sabah. In the previous episodes, we've had four interviewees sharing their experiences and thoughts on how and why should we treat this issue of statelessness. And from their sharings, we know that knowledge is the key to change the destiny of this community. Knowledge, as mentioned many times before, is so powerful. But in this episode, I would like to explore how far will this form of assistance benefit them, and if there's any negative impact on their lives. Alright, a quick rewind here. Miss E described how education has changed her life. Shakila explained how learning basic knowledge like reading, writing, and numeracy skills can protect this community from exploitation. Dr. Huda talked about her wish and hope to help the stateless children to become independent by teaching them more skills. Mukmin explained the aim and strategies needed to help this community. And for everything that they've shared with us, I am, first of all, very grateful. And I do agree with what they do and also their views. But my friends Hushan, Kaylee, and Aisha raised an interesting question for us to discuss.
Well, yeah, we all know education can benefit everyone, including stateless children and their families. It gives people chances to realize their dreams, to pursue their rights. But do they really want to change the world? They, as in the stateless community. I mean, it's not going to be easy. I get it. I understand the point of stepping out of comfort zone. But who are we to judge or decide for them? Because I watched a few documentaries and vlogs on YouTube before. At least the people who showed up in the videos, they look happy with their lives. I wonder if someday, when they finally got their citizenship, when they have to adapt to the lives of urban cities, would they still be happy? What they eventually got is something they're happy with, or is it just gonna be something that makes them feel lost?
I think this is why we can adapt the situation of the stateless people in Sabah to Gayatri Spivak, can the subaltern speak as they? As in the case from most of us, education is important to ensure a better future. But this is not the case for the stateless kids in Sabah. The root problem for the stateless is about their unidentified identity, which makes them very much exposed to exploitation. In Can the Subaltern Speak, Spivak expressed that it is an ethical problem of investigating a different culture based on universal concepts and frameworks. Are their current situation really a problem for them, or are we, like Spivak said, attempting to exert our effort to situate themselves as investigating subjects to speak for them in order to present their voice? We are required to consider it over again.
Simply disrupting their usual way of life. So when we think about issues like this, it's somehow a complicated and sensitive issue to bring about, as you're unable to distinguish when you've crossed a certain line in this community. However, at the same time, as pointed out in the previous episodes of this podcast, such as the episode on E's journey, it is also important for these communities to adapt and learn certain skills that will be beneficial for them so that they are not left out from society and are not taken advantage of.
I only knew about them in 2017. And at that time, it was under a different NGO. It wasn't under Born Your Comrade or Skola Alternative. But before that, I never really seen any documentary or news about stateless community. But there's one word that I used to hear a lot during my high school time in Sabah back in 2011, which is pilak. It was used so casually, so only after that I found out that it is a derogatory word to describe stateless people, usually those who are from the Philippines. So some of the local community do actually feel uneasy with their presence. I moved to Sabah in 2011, so only after coming to Sabah, only after being involved with NGOs, my family began to talk about it. In terms of why, I don't think it is appropriate to compare one issue to another. If I cared about another issue, then you can still ask, oh, why do I focus only on that? What about the other issues? But in general, I love volunteering as a teacher. So if I see any opportunity for me to volunteer as a teacher, I would just join. It was the same thing for the stateless issue. I started volunteering with them, with the NGO, with my sister. And only after that, I realized that it is more than just that. So it is very important for different NGOs, for different organizations to work together, tackling different aspects of this issue. As much as I wish for this to be solved, I can't quite imagine, honestly, the cultural and social changes that might happen once they are given access to other social structures and norms. I feel like in order for them to survive and fit in with the majority, it's unavoidable to sacrifice some traits of their cultural identity. Modern society has experienced losing a huge part of their culture. So, of course, I wouldn't want to see them transforming into another urban community. However, I am not saying that statelessness shouldn't be solved just for me to have my vision of a preserved culture realized. God, no, not at all. I think Malaysia has done a good job in respecting and maintaining different cultures, different languages, and different religions. In fact, Malaysia is not Malaysia without these multicultural and multi-religious communities. I'm just, you know, really curious on to what extent the minority has to adapt to the majority's standards.
Yeah, my dissertation was about identity, so I read some theories about cultural identities before. So from my limited knowledge, there are different concepts about cultural identity. The Enlightenment, sociological concept, and postmodern concept. Well, the first one, the Enlightenment, believes individuals have an unchangeable inner core. Sociology believes individuals discover what their inner cores are through social interactions and learnings of values and beliefs and etc. etc. But I am more to postmodern concept. This concept believes that cultural identity is something changeable. As what Storthold calls it, it's a movable feast, meaning it will never be fixed. It changes accordingly. It changes all the time according to this environment and situation. So none of us will be fixed. Our cultural identity changes all the time, including the stateless community.
You have the point. But in my opinion, the politicization of the identity matter is a form of discrimination. The so-called native elites try to identify themselves with the stateless people became very complicated. The native elites took advantage of this issue in exploiting the country. They joined hands in hands, expecting various implementations so as to bully the stateless people. The criteria for racial superiority or inferiority was on the basis of identification or requirement of documentation in our country. This is again unfair.
In addition to Kaylee's point, I would also like to highlight the songs that we include in our podcast, sung by Sekolah Alternative Students. Kami Anak-Anak Merdeka Ingin Berjasa Nusa Bangsa and Mari Kawanku Mari Semua Kita Buktikan Pendidikan Suluh Kejayaan. you know, like they were taught in school to identify themselves as citizens of a country who has yet to acknowledge their presence here. I think we can think of this from Spivak's perspective. Spivak is an Indian scholar, and she sees people who are socially, politically, and geographically outside the hegemonic power structure, which in this case is the stateless community, as being unable to speak. In fact, treated as a commodity by those who are superior to them. So the stateless community here will always be seen as the other, because they are socially, politically, and geographically outside the majority.
I think this others thing is made up. It's constructed by us humans. In fact, because of modernization, because of the innovation of technology and telecommunication, like the internet, etc., we can access to media and learning sources from other countries. So there are no longer physical borders that can obstruct us from learning different culture, different knowledge, different beliefs, and different perspective anymore. So yeah, maybe they are, but if compared to the past, we've improved so much. And so we are sharing a global civilization now. So who are the others and who are the locals? We don't have specific definition anymore. We are all global citizens. You get what I mean? So all I'm trying to say is, I don't know why status communities are excluded. Them being labeled as others, or, you know, not part of us, at least culturally speaking, not politically speaking, it's just because they do not have the chance to access to what we are assessing. That they're not learning what we are learning. So, and these borders are all set by us.
Ah, yes. Well, we do share a global identity or a global understanding about certain things. But I think there are practices and beliefs that we still hold close within our own communities. None of us will always be the same. Differences must be celebrated. Taking this issue back to the stateless community, if they're happy with their lives now, that's great to know. But are they also happy with the fact that they can't access to healthcare, education, can't even dream of becoming teachers, doctors, lawyers? Are they happy to live in poverty their whole lives and to pass on this poverty to their next generations? Are they also happy about all those? Don't get me wrong. Being poor is not the only or the whole point here. What I'm trying to say is, without proper identification, what other things do they have to sustain their lives? What do they have to protect themselves? Without income, how much of education and healthcare could they afford? That is why I would like to pay my highest respect to all the speakers invited for this podcast, and also other individuals who offered themselves for the stateless community in Sabah. I think it's clear by now that we appreciate transparent and focused non-governmental organizations so much, because when they do work, they do it for the community and nothing else. They are independent from political and personal interests. Remember when I brought up Spivak's view about the community that cannot speak because they are socially, politically, and geographically outside the majority? That is, if we stick to the system and social structure that trivialized them in the first place. NGOs who work with this community know that they are only representing their voices for now. But ultimately, they want this community to be independent and able to speak for themselves. However, try to imagine this as a family. Mom and dad have 5 children. But for some reasons, one of their kids is treated as inferior to the others. Maybe there are internal issues. Maybe the kid is adopted, but this child is not sent to school, not given any medical treatment when needed, and kept inside the house. One day, a friend of mom and dad came to visit and found out that they actually have 5 children, not 4. Out of empathy, he tried to help the child as much as he could, and later found out by the parents. They got worried, but they said, "Oh, it's okay, we're good. At least only he knows." Yes, that person is kind enough for helping, but is that the whole picture here? As explained by Miss E in the first episode, them being stateless doesn't just disadvantage them. It would disadvantage the other party as well, and the country. Why ignore them when you can equally develop them as one of the members of the family? So, in a good way, if they are recognized, documented, and received proper education like the rest of us, they would be able to contribute more to the country. More doctors, more teachers, more nurses, more workers, and more intellects. The child might not know the importance of education as long as he has a place to call home. But if we keep neglecting them and see statelessness as a natural process, as something unchangeable, they will not be able to guarantee their own security. Today, they are deprived of education, healthcare, and access to so many things. Tomorrow, no one knows what will happen. Well, I am not super involved with the community to make a conclusion about them. I believe those who have lived with them, communicated with them on a daily basis, would have a better understanding of the community. But I remember Shakila saying that we can't be too idealistic, thinking that, oh, if we do this, it will change their lives. If we compare their economic level to those who are identified as Malaysians and live in poverty, I would say that the difference is not that big. The importance of being properly documented is not to ensure that they will all stop fishing and work in an office or anything, but to give them basic human rights that everyone deserves. For now, their life is a cycle of poverty and being marginalized. Imagine if they're given education and access to public service. They'll meet more people, they can go to places they want, they can break the cycle. What they want to do next after given citizenship is completely up to them. And that wraps our final episode for Undocumented Sabah for now. Only the podcast has come to an end, but this issue is still very much present until today. Those are a lot to digest, so we thank you for staying till the end, listening to our discussions about statelessness in Sabah, Malaysia. All episodes are on our website and Spotify for you to listen anytime, anywhere. If you haven't followed us on Instagram, kindly search for our Instagram account, Undocumented Sabah, click the follow button, and share it around. Thank you! Atau orang Bajau cakap, maksukul!
Merdeka, merdeka, merdeka bangsaku. Merdeka, merdeka, merdeka tanah airku. Merdeka, merdeka, merdeka selamanya.
Kami anak-anak merdeka, ingin berjasa nusa bangsa. Sedia bekerja, setia bersama negaraku Malaysia. Sedia bekerja, setia bersama negaraku Malaysia.
Jangan abaikan kami, anak-anak negeri ini. Bercita tinggi membangun bangsa, negaraku berjaya.
Bercita tinggi membangun bangsa, negaraku berjaya. Merdeka, merdeka, merdeka bangsaku, merdeka, merdeka, merdeka tanah airku, merdeka, merdeka, merdeka selamanya.
Kami anak-anak merdeka, ingin berjasa nusa dan bangsa, sedia bekerja, setia bersama. Negaraku Malaysia, negaraku berjaya.
Kami anak-anak merdeka, ingin berjasa nusa bangsa, sedia bekerja, setia bersama. Negaraku Malaysia, sedia bekerja, setia bersama. Negara